Girl, I've been watching Love Island, so.
You've been watching Love Island?
Okay, we're going to get through this, because have you been doing that? Because yes. Then we need to talk. Okay, well, Love Island USA?
Yes, yes.
Good.
This is my first time ever watching. Okay, well, we'll get through what we're doing here, okay. And then we'll talk about Hoda.
Yeah. Oh, Hoda, what a mess. Oh, God, Hurricane Hoda. Stop, girl, stop. You've just really shot yourself in both feet and chopped yourself off at the knees.
It just keeps getting worse. Okay.
It does. Okay. But yeah, I mean, why? Yeah, it's mindless trash. And it's great to be like, oh my God, the drama. Who are they going to couple up with?
I know. And it matters instead so of little. Like,
are we going to war with Iran? I don't need to think about that. Let me watch Love Island.
Yeah. Hello everyone, and welcome to Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. I'm Kim.
And I'm Katie. And we're here to talk about singing and dancing and Bollywood girls.
Bollywood girls just living in a Jane Austen world.
Yeah, which can be fun.
Yeah.
And can also be stressful.
Can also mean your parents wanting you to marry people you don't want to marry, or you wanting people to get married who don't want to marry each other.
Yeah.
Today we are talking about two movies.
Yes.
Bride and Prejudice, which is an adaptation of Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice.
Mm-hmm.
And Aisha, which is an adaptation of Jane Austen's Emma.
Yeah.
Shall we start with overarching thoughts?
Yes, please. Yeah. I've seen Aisha before. We've both seen it before. I mean, you've seen Bride and Prejudice before too, but
yeah.
I had not. I can't even tell you like how much I loved Bride and Prejudice.
I'm so glad to hear that.
I was in it immediately and yep. I was like, oh my God, I don't know why I kind of thought it would be, like, silly. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I thought it would be silly.
Yeah.
But no, it was amazing. I was in it immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. That's excellent. I had remembered it being silly, and there are some silly elements to it, but
yeah,
I think that they actually did a really good job with it. I think in my mind, I had been remembering it as being, like, maybe not a very good movie, and maybe it wouldn't be all that worth, like, watching and talking about, but it was really fun. I'm really glad we watched it.
It is. It made me, like, laugh out loud. In certain parts. I was like, oh, that's actually very funny. Like, it just seemed maybe a bit funnier than certain other versions of Pride and Prejudice are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always the characters that will elicit laughter, like the Mr. Collins of the world.
Sure, yep.
But this one, I was like, oh, Darcy is making me laugh more than he normally does. Like, I found this Darcy was less brooding and more just, like, socially awkward.
Yeah, which is actually what Darcy is when it comes down to his character. He's just also handsome, so that makes the social awkwardness seem like brooding.
Exactly. And so I like that it's like, okay, that's the way we're taking this character, like, as written.
Yeah.
Which was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved it. I have more thoughts, but we can go into that when we actually talk about it.
Perfect. I was going to say, I did not enjoy Aisha as much as I remembered enjoying it before. Yeah.
The thing about Bride and Prejudice, and I wrote this, I think that that is a fantastic example of a really good adaptation.
Yes, I agree.
Where it stays true to the original, like, heart of the source material, but also is its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it takes enough liberties with what happens in the characters that you're like, okay, like, this can stand alone as well. Aisha, if I didn't have Emma, and if I didn't have an innate knowledge and love of the story of Emma, I would not like this movie. It cannot stand alone by itself at all.
Yes. I completely agree with that. I felt like it was so stilted in a way. Like, it felt like, okay, well, this is now what happens in Emma to these characters, so it's now going to happen to these characters. It felt like we were sort of just told, like, this is now what's going to happen, as opposed right. to it making sense that there was, like, this narrative arc.
Yeah. A lot of the character motivations weren't there.
Yeah.
And, frankly, like, there wasn't really a ton of chemistry between anyone.
Yeah, I wasn't all that interested in really any of the characters. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's hard because, like, Sonam Kapoor and Abe Diol, I think they both have this natural charm that's really mm-hmm. appealing about them. And so I love them both as, like, actors. And I think the little charm that you see, it comes from just who they are and right. not any sort of extra, like, pizzazz, you know? Like, yes. yeah. Yeah, I have thoughts about that, too.
I know. I do, too. So, yeah, clearly we have more to say about both of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with Bride and Prejudice.
Yes! That sounded like a strangled yes, but that's an excited yes.
You're so excited that your words are coming out sounding all crazy.
Yeah.
In a truly weird order on IMDb... I'm going to start with Aishwarya Rai Bachchan as Lalita Bakshi, mm-hmm. and then Martin Henderson as William Darcy.
Yep.
Namrata Shirodkar as Jaya Bakshi, Naveen Andrews as Balraj.
Yes.
Oh, and Anupam Kher is yeah. Papa.
I was like, you definitely had mentioned that he was in it to me yeah. at some point, but I forgot, which I love forgetting that people are in things.
And then being delighted when you see them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because I was just like, Papa Anupam Kher is here. This is great. And it was.
Yeah. And then the movie is directed by Gurinder Chadha. And I do want to just say both of these movies are directed by women.
That's incredible.
Which is awesome. And obviously there are a lot of Jane Austen adaptations that are directed by men, mm-hmm. but...
Some really good ones.
Some very good ones, some of our favorites. But uh-huh. I also just, like, Jane Austen was all about women. She was all about yeah. writing stories about women, for women. And I was reading, like, recently about how, like, her work does not pass the reverse Bechdel test. Like, there are no moments where two men talk to each other about anything other than women. I don't even think there are any moments where they talk about anything without a woman present.
I mean, we hear about Knightley talking to Mr. Martin about Mr. Martin's hopeful marriage.
Yeah, conversations between men happen off stage. We don't need to know about them. We don't care what the men are talking about, except where that's it directly so relates to the plot with the women.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I never thought about it that way, but yeah.
Yeah, so she was all about the girlies. So these are movies created by women, uplifting mm-hmm. women's stories with varying success.
I love that. I have two things about the cast of Bride and Prejudice.
Okay. Let's hear it.
First, did you ever watch Lost?
No.
Okay. Naveen Andrews, who plays Balraj, he was in Lost for, like, okay. many seasons. He played a character named Saeed, whom I adored. And I didn't know he was in this. So literally, as the movie starts, I'm like, Saeed is here? That's crazy. Awesome. Loved that.
Uh-huh.
Second thing, the guy who plays Wickham...
Uh-huh.
Daniel Gillies, or Gillies, probably Daniel Gillies.
Yeah.
He's from Vampire Diaries.
Oh!
And I was like, Elijah, what are you doing here, you sexy old vampire? And it's funny. It was just funny.
Yeah.
To see him in denim capris.
Yeah, to see him just being like a white hippie in Goa.
Yeah.
Which also is so perfect, like... The way that this movie positions the character tropes.
Yes.
Like, having Wickham be a hippie is so perfect and smart. And then, like, also, like, having yeah. Mr. Coley, like, the Mr. Collins character be an NRI is, yeah. like, these are things that just, like, watching it as someone without any familiarity with Bollywood, with right. Indian culture, like, all this stuff just goes right over my head. And watching it now, I'm like... I see what we're doing.
Yeah, and it's so smart. I mean, and that's what a good adaptation does.
Yes. Yes.
Is it figures out how the archetypes of these characters would fit into this setting and mm-hmm. like what would actually be the push and pull and the conflicts here and all of that stuff. And I think just speaking ahead to Aisha, like they were just like, let's just drop yep. these characters in and not really have any of the backgrounds make sense or yeah. anything like that. So I did really appreciate that too.
I totally agree. And I was also just gonna, I'll say this now about Aisha because it's like we're talking about it now, but like they don't actually like play with the situations the way no. that we do in Bride and Prejudice.
Yeah,
like Bride and Prejudice is actually taking advantage of
right
cultural things that are happening yes. and intercultural conflict that happens and yes. actual like real life prejudice.
Yeah.
You know, to tell this story, whereas Aisha, some of that, like, there were ways that that could have been woven in, like...
Yeah, there's some class stuff in it.
Yeah, but it was never, they didn't actually do anything with no. it. And I'll just say this now, too, in case any other sort of criticisms of Aisha come up before we actually, like, fully dive into mm-hmm. talking about it. The director of this movie, of Aisha, was not happy with the final product. And that's all I'll say now, but I just feel like it's worth knowing that yes. from the start.
Yeah. No, I think that's helpful.
Yeah.
But okay, Bride and Prejudice.
Yes.
Let's go. So we're not doing a plot recap. We're kind of just talking about our thoughts and feelings and yeah. emotions.
Yeah.
And fangirling, which I love.
Absolutely.
First up on my list, other than talking about Papa Anupam Kher being uh-huh. here, which we already talked about, that first dance number.
Oh, yes.
So good. I was so impressed by Balraj's dancing.
Yeah.
Because, again, I have only ever seen this man stranded on, like, an island with some weird stuff happening.
I don't know much about Lost, but I can't imagine there was much dancing.
There was no dancing. I mean, maybe some fan of Lost will be like, but don't you remember that one episode? But no. I did also say, like, if Bingley had danced like this in the other versions, mm-hmm. I'd be all about it. Like, oh. I already like Bingley as a character, but it feels like Balraj is a bit cooler than the normal Bingley.
Yeah, he's cool. I'm more attracted to him than I am to Mr. Darcy. Like, and that's just, he's very charismatic and
yes.
charming, and he's got the British accent, and which most Bingleys do, but.
Yes. That's so true. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. There's a making of, like, little mini, like, 10-minute making of video that I think originally appeared on the DVD that I found on YouTube.
Uh-huh.
And in that, the actor who plays Balraj talks about how they, like, kept the choreography simple for him because he's like, I don't dance.
He did so great,
though. So great. And I think it's a great example of what we've talked about before, where, like, as long as your energy is there,
yeah.
even if your technique's not perfect, you're fine. You're golden.
Yeah. Like, I didn't even notice that the choreography was simple because I also think, the choreographers for these films, like, they're so good at making things look more complicated than they mm-hmm. actually are.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Which is so cool.
That's a good way of doing it when you have a mixed groups.
Yeah.
Which, and the music too, you know, all of the kind of quote-unquote research that I did, you know, everyone talks about, like, the melding of cultures and, yes. and filming techniques and everything that's coming into play in this movie, but the music and the decision to have it, you know, have there be songs that feel very, like, Hindi, Bollywood musical numbers, but putting them in context the way you do in a Western musical,
yeah.
and then also bringing in, like, more, like, of a musical-style song or two,
yes.
like, more of a Western musical-style song or two, is brilliant. It's such a good way of making this movie feel like it fits in both of those worlds, in the Hollywood yes. world and the Bollywood world.
Yeah, like, it's so funny. I don't know why it didn't even... It didn't cross my mind to think that there'd be actual songs.
Mm.
Again, I kind of just went into it with, like, very few expectations,
yeah.
which is great. I was just excited to watch it. And so obviously when the first dance number happens, it's like, well, sure, you're dancing at a wedding, like, cool. But when the first, like, I would say musical number happened,
yeah.
I was like, oh, oh, we're singing. Oh, yeah. Okay. And like, this is happening. Like, you are singing. This isn't like a fantasy. This yes. is happening. And so then I was like, oh my God, this is a musical. This is cool. So yeah, I do really love that melding. And I think they did it really well. I feel like we should also mention, because I noticed this only at the end during the credits, but that Zoya and Farhan Akhtar did the lyrics.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And Gurinder Chadha, the director, talks a lot about how she is English and Indian. And so she was like, you know, wanting to show the melding of cultures. And she also directed Bend It Like Beckham, which I remember seeing once when it first came out, but I haven't seen since.
Yeah, I was wondering that because it said like Bend It Films.
Yeah.
And I've never seen that movie.
Yeah. I remember it being good. But I'm not surprised that, like, this seems to sort of be her style of telling stories, is, like, telling intercultural stories, like, having sort of more of a global perspective than just, like, limiting it to one scope. And, yeah, she said she wanted the movie to feel like the musicals she grew up watching, which were both Hollywood musicals and Bollywood musicals. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I also, again, going back to the note of, like, Darcy being more socially awkward than brooding and how much I love it, when he's having the issue with the drawstring on his pants. And then, like, they're like, you know, Balraj is like, okay, you should ask Lalita to dance. And he's like, I don't dance. And then as he's walking away, his pants fully fall down.
His pants are off his body.
Like, you just naked thighs. I love that that is the reason that he's like, I mean, maybe he doesn't like to dance anyway, but I just like that added hilarity to it. And then meanwhile, like, Lalita is like, okay, well, screw you, sir. Like, I just think that's very funny.
Yeah. Can we talk about this Mr. Darcy for a little bit? Because there's two things I want to say. One, I don't remember even having a crush on this man when I was, like, 13 watching this movie for the first time and had a crush on, like, anything anything that was a man, you know? And so there's that. So, I was like, I don't know. I had a little bit of trouble kind of connecting to a Mr. Darcy who I was not, like, you know, wouldn't actively want to be chasing myself kind of thing.
Yeah.
I also, it's hard, and I think they do an okay job of, like, making him of redeeming him as a character. It's harder to watch his prejudice when it's prejudice towards another, like, ethnic group.
Yeah, because the whole thing is, like, he's, like, prejudiced, and then this Indian woman is like, no, let me prove, well, she's not going out of her way to prove these things, but
yeah.
She basically does end up playing the role of, like, educator to educate him on his prejudices. And
yeah,
that's a little bit of a bummer in the sense that, like,
yeah. And it is true. Like, she's not doing it intentionally with, like, a, like, okay, let me tell you about this. It's more just, like, her being herself and having the opinions that she has. It's really showing him that the error of his ways and of his thinking. But yeah, no, we never like to see somebody in that, like, position. Even if it had been, like, and we do get some of, like, Balraj, like, trying to, like, shake him up a little bit. But it's, like, at least they're friends, you know? Like, that dynamic is, you know, is more comfortable to see. But, like, for the sake of the plot, we need that to be coming from the Lizzie Bennett character. So, like, Lalita needs to kind of take that on to be the reason that he starts to question things.
Right. And I don't frankly know how you do that adaptation in this setting with a white Darcy and an Indian, like, Lizzie. I don't know how you do that without that being one of the points of conflict, unfortunately.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I also think one kind of plot change that I didn't like is that there isn't the kind of resolution of Mr. Darcy as a character until the end.
Yeah.
So, like, we don't get the sort of, it's not even a reconciliation in the book, but, you know, the establishment of, like, oh, Mr. Darcy, like, didn't do any of the bad things we think he did.
Right.
Happens in the middle of the book.
Yes, yeah.
And so here, I don't know, it just, it felt wrong. It felt weird. I felt like, okay, we're sort of like, we're just over it. But then we also don't know yet that he broke up Jaya and Balraj. So, like, we still have that to be mad at him for. And then it feels like such a betrayal at the end. I don't know. Yeah. It just, I think the placing of that just, it kind of messed with things for me.
Yeah, and it's like they shifted it so that that's like the climax.
Yeah.
Almost more instead of like the Wickham.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of thrown to the side a little bit. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, they act like, oh, it's a big thing. And like, it kind of is, but it's not really. And it's resolved very quickly. Like, I do also think the pacing of Pride and Prejudice, like the second half, almost feels a little, or not even the second half, but like the final 30 minutes feels a little bit rushed.
Yeah. Well, and their whole, like, they like fall in love with each other, like, well before the end of the movie, and that felt rushed, as opposed to the relationship sort of building gradually to the end.
Yeah.
But I agree, like, the Lucky Wickham stuff does just kind of happen all of a sudden, and it's also just like, he just throws out there that he got that Wickham got Alexis Bledel pregnant. Like,
yeah, I wrote that in my note. I was like, oh, what? Okay, I'm sorry. Like, and isn't that like, as Lolita is like, she's already found out at this point that Wickham ran away with Lodki. And then Darcy's like, oh yeah, let me tell you about what happened.
Yeah.
Not only, like, it would have been enough if he'd been like, Wickham, you know, like, took advantage of my little sister's, like, naivety and her youth and, like, slept with her and then abandoned her. Like, that would have been enough. But instead he's like, she got pregnant and I had to pick up the pieces. And then immediately, Lolita is like, oh my God, but he's with my sister. We have to go find them.
Yeah.
And that never comes up again.
No. Yeah, no.
Georgie, the sister, seems fine. I know. I'm like, is she a mother? Did she get an abortion?
Yeah.
I get not wanting to talk about it, but then why did you say she got pregnant? Because now I'm curious.
Like, she didn't need to get pregnant. Like,
no.
She, like, he took advantage of her. He wanted her money. Done. It's the same as the book.
Yeah.
But then at this, it's also like, in the book, Lizzie knows that, and so she makes this choice not to tell people about Wickham, and then she feels like she has something to regret, as opposed to, like, Mr. Darcy just keeping it all entirely to himself, and then it's like, he's about to get another girl pregnant! It's like, Darcy, you could have stopped this! Like, it just, it really changes, like, the flavor of that moment, for sure.
Well, and I'm just like, Wickham, like, practice safe sex.
Yeah, come on,
stop, man. Getting girls pregnant.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's a hippie thing.
But it is also, it's just like the rush to stop this man from having sex with this girl. It is a serious thing, but it feels a little more silly than like trying to rush to stop them from getting married.
Yes.
Or I mean, obviously, I think the whole thing in the book is that they did have sex and weren't necessarily planning on getting married. And then that, you know. So I do understand that's a little interesting to translate to modern times. But, the plot kind of, I thought they were doing so well. And then it kind of unraveled a little bit towards the end. And I don't love that things devolve into fist fights in both of these films.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And I just don't like the whole idea because, like, in the original Pride and Prejudice, Darcy does save the day by, you know, paying Wickham off and to marry Lydia and everything is fine. And I don't love that they were like, well, in order for him to be a hero and in order to, like, save the situation, he has to punch Wickham in the face.
Yeah.
I was like, that's not true. You could be a hero in other ways. Like, that wasn't the only option.
Yeah. I'm realizing now, I wonder if that was maybe a misguided choice to make it feel a little more Bollywood-y to have there be, like, a fist fight at the end.
Yeah,
I was thinking that. Yeah. And especially because it's happening as there's, like, a literal Bollywood movie playing, like, you know, on the screen playing behind them in this movie theater. I think that was maybe the intention behind that, behind having it be more of, not having it be as much the subtle way that he's the hero in Pride and Prejudice. But I still feel like there was enough Bollywood in this movie that we didn't need a fist fight between two men. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, as they're all leaving and leaving Wickham alone in this theater, like, Wickham's like, Lizzie, I loved you. Like, it was always you. And that, too, I'm like, no.
Yeah.
We don't need that. Because I think the whole thing is, like, Wickham's cruising looking for, like, his next easy mark.
Right.
He realizes Lizzie is too with it.
Yeah.
A target. And so there's a reason he goes for the
not younger to call Lydia sister stupid, but who's,
yes.
Yeah, you know, she's not as worldly.
Yeah. And so, I don't know, that was like, we don't need to make this any more, like, deep than it was.
That's a great point. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
I also felt like it was weird that they like, teased Lucky and Wickham.
Yeah,
like, talking and emailing and stuff. And I was like, why are, like, this is kind of, like, spoiling the climax, I feel.
Yeah. And it also makes it feel like they actually have a relationship.
Yeah.
Where the whole thing is that they don't. He just,
right.
Like, runs yeah. off with her. And she's just like, well, he's handsome.
I'll do it. Yeah.
Yeah. One more thought on Wickham's appearance.
Uh-huh.
I love to there because they're at this, like, beach party. And then Wickham literally just emerges from the
sea. Why?
Like a merman.
Like, if they had shown, like, it would have been nice to have seen him, like, because going into the ocean.
Yeah, like, dive off a rock or something.
Yeah, like, did he fall off a boat? Like, was he shipwrecked? Did he just made his way to Goa? Like, why is he emerging from the sea?
I don't know. I was literally like, is this like a Robin Hood Men in Tights where he swam the whole way? Like, he swam...
Home.
And this is him emerging in, like, again, denim capris.
Yeah.
No shirt.
Wet denim capris.
Yeah, wet jeans. We don't like wet jeans.
No.
I do, and I going back to Darcy for a moment, I agree with you. I'm not longing after this Darcy, but I'm kind of like, I can see how someone would be into you.
Yeah.
And I do think that they actually do a good job capturing the longing and, like, the sexual tension between the two.
Mm.
Like, I did feel that.
Okay, yeah.
Because I just like the wistful looks and the longing glances and then the, like, what's going to happen? They're staring at each other for so long.
Yeah.
So I did enjoy that.
Yeah.
Talking about Mr. Coley.
Yes.
Okay. I do think... He was a great take on Mr. Collins.
Sure.
Because he's still the same level of silly. He's just like an outgoing kind of silly instead of like a religious silly. I did kind of hope for the potato comment to come up in some way. Like when he's at the dinner table, I'm like, I understand they might not be eating potatoes, but I really wanted something.
So like the potato line specific to the Keira Knightley adaptation,
yes.
But the line of like, oh, your daughters did such a good job of making this food. Yeah. And no, we can afford to have people make our food for us. Yeah.
Yes. Again, I think it's fun that they made him just as like oblivious to the world around him.
Yeah.
But more silly and outgoing, and I kind of liked it because he has the same level of ick as any other Mr. Collins,
right?
But he is more entertaining,
yeah,
in this way than like a boring, quiet person who,
No, I think he's a good character. He's a good adaptation of that character. I like that we did get the closets comment because that's always one of my favorite. Like, look at the closet, you know. He's very very into that.
Yeah,
and of course. His line, no life without wife, that then brings us into one of the other best dance numbers from this
movie.
Which
is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was very unexpected for me, too. I was still caught off guard. I was like, right, this is a musical. Get used to it.
Get used to them breaking into song.
And specifically, like, English song. Yeah.
Yes.
I was like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. The songs are, like, telling the story. Along with the dialogue in a nice way. Yeah, I know, I love that number. That will always hold a place in my heart because that my cousins who showed this movie to me, that we like did that did all the song and dance, like, we, like, taught ourselves the dance moves and danced along with the movie, but that one in particular, and because there were four of us, we decided who would be which character by age. And since I was the second oldest, I got to be Lolita, so, you know.
Nice.
Yeah, that was good news for me. But, okay, class differences.
yeah, let's talk about it.
That's an important element from Pride and Prejudice. That's where a lot of the prejudice is kind of coming from in Pride and Prejudice. And we have it here too, but there's this additional layer that's also there in the original text, but is, I think, a little bit more obvious in Pride and Prejudice, which is that Lolita's family is still like a middle-class Indian family and, you know, and maybe even like upper middle class, even though they're not, you know, they're not swimming in cash, but like...
No, but they're clearly like, they have a nice home.
They
like,
have a nice home. They have people who they employ to take care of their house. And we see quite a bit of contrast between them and specifically Lolita and her friends and like the people in the community who kind of serve them in various ways. Yeah. And I did feel like the movie made the people who serve them the butt of the joke, or and like the a caricature of themselves on a few different occasions.
Yeah.
Which didn't quite sit right with me, because I felt like otherwise the movie did such a good job of like having there be this very real cultural conflict that fit in the story and felt real without being exploitative. And then there were these moments with, like, you know, the housekeeper and his teeth, and then and like the hijras dancing on the street, like kind of poking fun at that. Like, it just was like, we could have left that out and it would have we didn't need it. I think especially watching it as a white person and thinking like, what if white people laughed at this? I wouldn't feel good about that.
That's no.
Yeah.
If all you have is the context of what's being shown to you. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, we're supposed to think that Mr. Darcy's mom is like a bad person because she's trying to, like, you know, commercially exploit Indian culture. And we're making the point that India is like, you know, this beautiful country, this culturally rich country, but there's still the point being made that you have to have money in order to not be laughed at or not be kind of painted in not be mocked in a way.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. That it's only because of Lolita's status that she's able to speak in a way that people can, like, trust and listen to.
Right, yes.
Whereas if she were a servant, would Darcy respond the same way? Maybe not.
Right. Yeah, and in that way, it's not dissimilar to Jane Austen, because it's like, Mr. Darcy's not going to fall in love with a servant. Like, that's not what that story is. That could be a good story, but that's not what this one is. But, like...
We love that story, but
but it's just seeing it on screen and seeing there be that very clear distinction was shed a light on it.
I also thought it was brilliant to like have it be the cultural events or like the wedding that they're like, how do we get these characters in situations that kind of mirror the situations they were at or like in Pride and Prejudice in a society where people aren't throwing balls every weekend.
Right. Yeah. That's very true. Yeah. Again, that's the mark of a good adaptation.
Yeah, and they did it in a way that was, like, very believable, where it's, like, first it's all the wedding events, and then the Garba dance. That was really cool. I was like, that's something I haven't seen before.
Yeah. We get all of the moments of asking to dance, and there's, like, the first time when Darcy's like, no, and then there's the second time where Lolita says no, and then the third time where they do actually dance. I was very appreciative that, because those are all very important moments.
They are.
So to have them all in there is good. But yes, go on.
Those are like the peaks of their relationship development.
Yeah.
I also really like the song Take Me to Love. And I especially enjoyed it when there was a gospel choir that showed up.
See, that was a thing for me where I was like, I feel like all of the cultural stuff has felt very relevant so far. And then for us to just throw a gospel choir on the beach did feel maybe a little bit too much like we're slotting something in here that doesn't belong. But
it was interesting because it also reminded me of when the gospel choir shows up in Kahonaho in the not American Woman song, but American Woman song. Because I was like, why are they here with American flags? This is wild. I was wondering.
Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman.
American Woman is American Woman.
Right. Very different. But I got confused because I'm like, okay, there's definitely Woman, and then there's also a lot of American flags.
Yeah, no, it's a very reasonable mistake to make.
But so, because that immediately seeing this gospel choir made me think of that gospel choir. Mm-hmm. And I was like, is this just like a trend? That if something's set in the United States around this time period, they were like, it gotta have a gospel choir.
Yeah, you know, I wish that gospel choirs were more around, you know, not being someone who has easy access to a black church.
Yeah.
Or feels like they should go to a black church in any event. You know, I wish that I had more ready access to a gospel choir just showing up behind me, so I can understand why we want to put that in there.
But it did feel weird. I was like, what is happening? Like,
yeah.
One other note. Again, this is just a reference to the Keira Knightley adaptation of Pride and Prejudice. Mm-hmm. But when Lalita and Darcy are having their conversation about Wickham, I really wanted him to do the Mr. Wickham, but he didn't. Which is fine, because it's a different movie.
And also a different accent, so.
And also a different accent.
Yeah. But they do have, after the gospel choir in the show, is it Show Me to Love?
Yeah, is it Take Me?
Take Me to Love.
Yeah.
In that number at the end, there's them, like, we see them then alone on the beach. So I felt like that was, you know. And obviously, the Keira Knightley version came out later, so it's not.
Yes.
We're not saying that it's, like, reminiscent of that, but, like, yeah.
No.
You know, it's fun to watch all these adaptations and see what similarities they have, even if they're just tiny little subtle ones like that.
See, I also thought that moment on the beach was very Princess Bride, with the sun setting behind them and, like, their heads close. I was like, it's just reminded me of Princess Bride. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that was all my stuff. I did just also want to point out that whatever that, like, there was a song about India at a nightclub or something, and there was a black woman.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. What's her name? Is her
Ashanti.
Name? Ashanti. Ashanti, yes.
Yeah. And I'm watching it, and I'm like, is that Ashanti? It sounds like Ashanti. And I was like, Katie, there's no way. That'd be so weird. Why would Ashanti be here? And then at the end, it was like, thanks, Ashanti. And I was like, oh, my God. This is so early 2000s.
She was performing in Goa. What can we say?
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, that was fun.
Good.
Well, just a couple other things from the quote-unquote research I did. A lot of this we've already talked about, the way that the movie is interwoven styles and cultural elements to it, which, you know, largely I think they did a great job with. Mm. I really liked in particular in a couple different places in the making of video that I watched, as well as in an interview that I read between Ashray Bachchan and Martin Henderson. There was a lot of discussion about how the actors needed to come together. Like, they're coming from three different industries, really, because we've got the Hollywood actors, we've got the Bollywood actors, and then we've got the British actors.
Yeah.
And I guess they, you know, there was workshopping that happened early on to just get everybody kind of on the same page about things. Nitin Gantra, who plays Mr. Kohli, who's a British actor, I liked the way he described the differences. He was like, you know, the Hindi actors, they're coming in, they're like, have this emotional approach to everything. The American actors, they have this very analytical approach to everything. The British actors, we just want everyone to show up, hit their mark, and say their lines.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. That's so cool, though.
Yeah, yeah. And I liked that attention needed to be paid to, you know, just how do we all, we all do have a common language, I mean, English, but, like, you know, in terms of filmmaking, we have a common language. Let's all get on the same page with everything. And in that interview with Martin Henderson, Ash talks about how she took this on as like an acting challenge. She wanted to, she was coming off of Devdas, which was a hugely successful film for her. Like, you know, she's kind of in the peak of her career in these early aughts years, and she wanted something that was going to be a challenge. So she's like, I'm going to do this movie in a different industry, acting in a different way. And yeah, and she did a great job.
She did such a good job. Sidebar, because I did have this thought, and it's not a super charitable thought, but Alexis Bledel, she was the only one that felt like she was acting.
Sure, yeah.
Did you get that impression? I mean,
well, I just feel like she acted like she was on Gilmore Girls.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, which is true. Yes.
Like, she just, she, you know, she did the way that she was talking, I was like, this is, it's Rory. She's Gilmore. Rory. Yeah.
That, yes. I think maybe that's what made me feel weird about it, because I was like, that's just straight up Rory.
It felt very out of place, yeah.
Yes. Not necessarily Georgie. And it also, like, the whole conversation about, like, Georgie being the one to tell Lalita that Darcy broke up Balraj and Jaya, like, that felt really weird and out of place. Like, why would you just sit down and be like, oh yeah, did you hear he broke up? Like, I'm like, that's a weird thing to say.
And it, again, it's the timing of it all, where it's like, that we should have, that should have been resolved before they fell in love. We didn't, right? That shouldn't be coming up now. We're past this. They like each other now.
Yeah. But yeah, it struck me as interesting. A, I wasn't expecting Alexis Bledel to show up.
No, why
but
would
then
you
when
be?
She did, right. But then when she did, I was surprised that I was like, everyone else I would say did a really good job acting. And I feel like you didn't do as good of a job, which is interesting because I've seen her act in many things.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree.
Anyway, I forgot about that thought. Wanted to share.
No, it's a good one. Well, and the last thing I'll mention, I didn't actually look into, like, critical reception or box office or anything. Like, I think the movie was fairly successful, especially in the UK. I think, you know, especially with Chadha being a British director and coming off the success of Bend It Like Beckham, I think that's where this movie was, like, the most successful.
Yeah.
That being said, though, the Jane Austen Society of North America loved the film so much that they did make Chadha an honorary member, which I thought was great.
That is fun.
I did read one, like, public review, like, one, you know, just regular person's review of this, where they were saying that, you know, the movie might not have been as successful because certain Western audience members were maybe not ready to see a brown Lizzie Bennett on their screens.
Believe that.
And then they said, but, like, look how far we've come. We've got Simone Ashley as Kate Sharma in Bridgerton.
Yeah.
And I really liked that connection because, you know, Bridgerton is Regency, so I feel like we can still kind of bring it up in a conversation about Jane Austen.
Always.
Anyway, I'm just scrolling through because I'm pretty sure I said everything I wanted to say about all this good stuff for Pride and Prejudice.
Good. Overall, I loved it. I would definitely watch it again. I'm totally cool with that being the lion's share of the discussion around these two films because I do think it deserves more of a discussion.
I agree. Yeah.
Aisha.
I did not write down a whole lot about Aisha. Like, yeah, there wasn't much to say, you know? We've already made a couple of comments, but
yeah, well, let's move into Aisha.
Do it. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so cast and crew of Aisha. It was directed by Rajshree Oja, and it stars Sonam Kapoor as Aisha and Abhay Deol playing Arjun, our knightly character.
Yes.
Yeah, we already talked a little bit about it. I think that's the thing is that, like, most of my notes are more overarching, like, about it as a film rather than, like, oh, this scene.
Can we start off talking about Abhay Deol?
Let's do it.
Because I think he is a good amount of – I agree with the observation you made earlier that, like, there wasn't much depth to anything happening in this movie.
Yeah.
And so the fact that, like, I don't think that – Arjun is an interesting character isn't Abhay Deol's fault.
No.
I think he's a good, like, kind of on the surface, a good knightly actor because he's attractive, but in more of like a, you know, you get to know him and he's got this smile and he's got this charm and you're like, oh, shoot, I fell in love with him years ago kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is what you want from a knightly.
Yes. But I did want to say that I read an interview with Abbe Diol where he shared that he was also pretty disappointed in the final product of Aisha. He said he didn't, it's not the kind of movie he likes to do.
Yeah.
He said that it's, that it did not feel like an adaptation of Emma, which I think, and he meant because it's very shallow.
Yes, it is.
And he said, like, he was reading reviews that were, like, just talking about the fashion in the movie and not talking about anything else. Yeah. So, and Sonam Kapoor reacted to that, like, I can't believe he said these things. But I was like,
I can. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was very little emotion. And what was there, it was like they had a few cute moments where, again, it's just reliant on Abbe Diol and Sonam Kapoor's, like, natural charm and charisma. So it yeah. worked. But I just keep coming back to this, like, this Knightley, I feel like they had him somewhat correct, somewhat, like, in the way that he was, like, kind of guiding Emma to, like, the right choices of certain things mm-hmm. and, like, calling her out when she made the wrong choices. But, like, when she calls him shallow or, like, a sellout or a corporate zombie, I'm like, that's not Knightley's thing. That's not who he is. Yeah. And I don't really think the character – well, we don't really know much about this character. Like, Arjun, I don't know what he was up to. And, like, he kind of was acting like a corporate zombie. Like, I don't know. But, yeah, they just kind of missed the mark, well, on everything. But that especially. Yeah. But going along with the shallow thing, in Emma and in a normal adaptation – not normal, but, like, in other adaptations of Emma – I have found myself thinking more recently, why is Knightley into Emma? You know, like, but truly, like,
yeah,
I think it's a hard sell even when it's done well.
Yeah.
Because she is a little bit shallow and, like, that is what she cares about. But specifically in this movie in particular, I'm like,
she's so immature. Yeah. She's so childish. And that another review that I read was talking about how, like, intentionally infantilizing the movie is of Aisha's character. And, yeah, I completely agree with you. And even in an adaptation of Emma where you're maybe seeing more depth from Emma, it's still, like, you start to think, like, is Knightley only into Emma because he taught her to be less shallow?
Right. Like, that's, you know.
Which, no. And, like, I know that there's more to it than that. But I do, like, those thoughts come up for me, too, when I'm seeing it.
Well, yeah. And I also, it occurred to me, I was like, I think a big reason of why Knightley falls in love with Emma in the original book and in other adaptations is the way that she cares deeply about her father and for her father because you can see she has a good heart. Like, she has a giving heart. It's just misguided sometimes.
Yeah.
This Emma, we didn't get any of that relationship with her father. He was just kind of there to be like, why are you spending money? And like, kind of like, she's this petulant child spending his money instead of like this woman who's feeling kind of like the responsibility and sometimes the burden of caring for, like, her aging father because her sister's out of the house, her mother is gone. Like, we didn't get any of that. And I'm like, that is, like, the main pillar of who Emma is. So how can we have an Emma without that?
I completely agree. They watered that relationship down so much.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, we only have, like, two meaningful conversations between Dad and Emma in this. And one is him... Mr. Woodhouse would never criticize how much money Emma is spending. He would just be like, I completely trust and believe that you are spending this money on good things, on things that are sensible, because it's you and I love you and you can do no wrong in my eyes.
Exactly.
And yeah, you're so right, though. Like, the way that Emma, like, she says she doesn't want to get married because she doesn't want to leave her father.
Yeah.
And then it's this huge struggle for her at the end to reveal, like, I actually am getting married. None of that was there.
Nope.
And in fact, and to have her dad, to have Aisha's dad be the one to tell her, like, oh, you're in love with Mr. Knightley.
Great.
Not Mr. Knightley. But you're in love with Arjun? Go tell him. Go, like, no.
Yeah.
No.
That's not the character. And, like, that's fine, but then don't do an adaptation of Emma.
Right. Yeah. And also, I, like, why did they have her do it on a stage? Like, why? That was just so silly and ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, there was no plot relevant reason for that, character relevant reason for that at all. I was like, this is just stupid.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but it's just stupid.
Well, and similarly, I wonder if it was kind of like the Bollywood thing where it's like this grand romantic gesture instead of like having the one-on-one conversation of her like apologizing.
Yeah. I think that that's totally reasonable. And I also think like I would have loved for this movie to have a little bit more Bollywood going on.
Yeah, like, I think it would have made it more fun.
Yeah.
Because the fun, like, that's the thing. Emma is truly a comedy.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous, and I don't feel like they, it's like they pulled back from that, but then leaned in too hard in other areas.
Yeah. And I think a big, like, a big part of where the comedy in Emma comes from is just the sheer lack of anything happening.
Yeah.
Is just like how big of a deal is made about the tiniest little things.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And in this movie, it also kind of felt like nothing was happening, but not in a way that was intentionally reminiscent of Jane Austen.
No. Yeah.
And we already said this, the way that the plot follows Emma almost too closely. Like, yeah. It doesn't make sense that things happen. And I feel like the perfect example of that is Dhruv and Aarti's relationship.
Yeah.
Which comes completely out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Whereas in the book, like, you know, Jane Fairfax and
they're talking about each other.
Yeah, and Frank Churchill, it's like, you can see it, like, when you find out, you're like, oh my gosh, this has been there from the start. As opposed to just, like, Dhruv literally is like, well, you weren't interested in me, so I thought I'd make out with her. And then the next scene, they're getting married. Like, what?
Yeah. And I think that the movie also just, like, was all over the place where, like, everyone had genuine feelings for everyone or they wanted to make it seem like they did. Like,
yeah.
Knightley never, like, had a thing for Jane Fairfax. He, like, admired her. He was like, you're an accomplished woman. That's cool. Like, let me help support you however I can because you're, like, poor. But, like, that's another thing. Aarti is very well off. She's totally fine.
Yeah.
The whole core of what makes Jane Fairfax the character that she is doesn't apply here, and the whole reason that Churchill can't be with her until his aunt dies doesn't apply here. Like, and I'm just like, why did you? I think they just didn't want to deal with it,
and yet they still wanted to have, like, I don't know, it just the other, like, I think the way that you use Jane Fairfax is the way that they used Aarti in having her be like the, you know, what Aisha's jealous of,
right?
But you don't need to then have her end up with Dhruv. Like, she could just not end up with anyone.
Right.
And Dhruv could also just not end up with anyone. We don't care about him.
Yeah.
I don't care about him enough to have him be a part of the joint wedding at the end.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, no. But yeah, I think that that whole relationship and the way that those characters kind of show up was a bit of a misfire.
Yeah, I also just feel like whenever they did start to dive into something, they kind of just stopped.
Yeah.
Because, like, obviously you can tell that Emma is jealous of Aarti.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never explored. She never really has a conversation with Aarti where she's like, I feel like I've been a terrible person to you. Like, she's just really mean to her because she's jealous of her. And then she ends up with Arjun and it's whatever, I guess.
And it's fine.
And that's just not... The whole thing is that Emma realizes how terrible she's been. And here it's more like, oh, everyone hates me. I'm really sad. I guess I'll go apologize. But not necessarily because she realizes she needs to change her ways.
Yes.
Just because she has no friends.
Right, yeah. She's like, well, I've alienated everyone in my life, so I guess maybe I've done something wrong.
Right. I don't think she actually learned a lesson. Yeah.
And I think that the way that Emma is jealous of Jane Fairfax is relatable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas the way that Aisha is just mean to Aarti.
Yeah.
Is not, like, it just makes her look like a bad person. Like, I don't think anyone reading Emma is like, Emma's a bad person.
No,
it's like,
she's
a flawed person.
Yeah.
She's got some growing up to do.
Well, and also, like, going back to how the comedy is in that nothing really happens, I mean, that in itself is a play on this, like, upper-class woman who has nothing going on in her life, so she meddles in other people's lives. And it's a huge deal then when, like, these little things happen. And that, I feel like, was completely missed. And it was like, oh, no, we'll just talk about her, like, going out and going shopping and going to nightclubs. And, like, you're missing the heart of it. I also think that they had a big miss by not having any sort of Miss Bates character. Isn't that her name?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
How hard would it have been to have, like, an auntie who is really talkative and kind of annoys everyone, but she's just, like, always there because you have to have her there because she's, like, part of the group. Like, it's weird to me. It feels like that would have slotted in so well to, like, a Bollywood film that I don't understand why they completely cut her out.
Why isn't this here? Yes.
Especially when that is the driving force of the original Emma, is her being mean to Miss Bates.
Yeah, like, that's, like, the biggest fight and the biggest resolution that leads to Knightley and Emma falling in love. Yeah. And similarly, the fact that we have the, I think, actual related aunt, who is supposed to kind of be the Miss Taylor character, except that she isn't and doesn't do anything for the entirety of the movie.
Yeah, she's just kind of there.
Yeah. So again, it's just like, we need to have an equivalent to this. So let's just, like, throw one in, but not really think intentionally about, like, what that character brings to the story.
Yeah.
And the director, Rajshree Oja, so she wrote the screenplay in 2004. She couldn't find a production company to take it on until 2008. There was even a production company that said that she should make the script less woman-centered, which I'm like, well, then it's not... then it's not Jane Austen. I'm sorry. Yeah. Like we said, that's not what that is. But in a later interview, she talks about, like I said before, that she did not feel like the movie she was watching was the movie that she set out to create.
Yeah.
It was not what she had conceptualized. She says that the character of Emma is layered and she doesn't know where those layers vanished. That was a direct quote from this interview. And she says that, quote, Jane Austen herself wouldn't recognize Aisha as Emma.
Yeah.
And this originally appeared in the Mumbai Mirror in 2012, which was 2 years after the movie came out. And in that article, they referred to the movie as the Kapoor's vanity project.
Mm.
Because obviously the movie stars Sonam Kapoor and was produced by her father, Anil Kapoor.
Yeah.
So I think they may have had a hand in what made this movie a little less than what it could have been.
If they had the power to make certain decisions. Yeah. Yeah. I actually just had a thought about the fourth wall break. Like, we got one fourth wall break. It's the kind of film that I think can have fourth wall breaks. Like, Clueless had a few of them. And, like, I felt like they were setting that tone in that initial scene when she, like, looks dead in the camera and she's like, I love my life. And I'm like, great. I feel like we need some sort of narrator because we're not getting anything from the people. Yeah. So had they made the choice to have Emma be the narrator of her own story, fine. Like, you've already set the tone for a fourth wall break. So she can talk directly to us as the audience. And it just feels weird to me that they would have that little, like, cheap, like, I love my life thing and then not do it again when it could help them make that connection.
Yeah. You know, the Clueless of it all is, you know, needs to be mentioned only just in the sense that, like, there were things that they did just lift from Clueless, like the fact that she can't drive.
And the green plaid skirt suit.
Yeah. And that, you know, that's, it's like, homage. As far as nods go, that's a good one.
Yeah.
You know? But, like, I feel like this movie was like, okay, we're going to, we want to do Clueless, but so we want to do Emma. But we're not going to, again, actually think about, like, what made Clueless work. Clueless is an exceptional adaptation of Emma. It is,
yeah. And I think they did a great job of cutting out characters that weren't really necessary.
Yes, yes.
And with someone who knows the source material, you're not like, oh, but we're missing. No, you're like, okay, yeah, we've got enough going on here.
they don't have a Miss Bates either.
No.
But you don't miss her because you get everything that you need to get out exactly. of the story without her.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, well, we want to make these things. We're not actually going to think about how to make it work. We're just going to like throw it onto a screen and hope that it's received well, with a lot of like L'Oreal product placement.
Yes, so much of it. But also Pinky.
Yeah, let's talk about Pinky.
I just keep going back to, like, why were these choices made?
Mm-hmm.
So at first I was just like, okay, why is Pinky here? Because I couldn't remember the plot well enough to remember that she ended up with, the Elton character, Ron Deere.
Yeah.
And so at first I'm like, okay, why does Emma have this, like, best friend, Pinky? And then I was like, why would you make that choice instead of having Ron Deere just kind of bring in, like, another kind of shallow woman, yeah. like, is what happens in the book and, you know, all of that. The only thing I could think of is that they wanted to drive home the fact that Emma's, like, not a good friend, and they wanted to, like, add more to the lesson that Emma is learning. But Pinky was also horrible.
Yeah.
And it cheapened then Aisha's relationship with Shefali. So I was like, this feels weird and mean, and I just didn't get it.
Yeah, Pinky was taking the place of a lot of characters. Like, yeah. I feel like they maybe gave her some of the Miss Taylor stuff, but then she was also just, like, mean and nasty. And then, she's the one who ends up marrying Ron Deere. Which I actually, I did like that. I liked that they ended up together, but I was like, I would like it more if I had any real kind of sense of what her role is here. And I agree, mm-hmm. I think it was predominantly just to make Aisha look like a worse character.
Yeah.
And we were already pretty well aware of that, and it just created another conflict that I then felt bad about.
Yeah.
You know, just like, it just didn't like to see the main character engaging in.
Yeah, it's just weird for, like, the number of characters that they cut out. They somehow, you would normally do that to simplify things.
Yeah.
But then they somehow made things more complicated with the existing relationships between the characters left over, but then didn't explore the complication.
Yes, yeah.
And then you just end up with a mess.
Yeah, it was a mess, yeah.
And then at the end, they're like, okay, and then these two, and then these two, and then these two. Done. Everyone's happy.
Yep, everyone's paired off. Off they go.
Yeah.
Missed opportunities, I feel. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, as a person who loves Emma, I'm like, oof, that wasn't it. And I can only imagine that if you didn't know the story of Emma and you went and watched that, you'd really be like, what? Like, what is happening? Is this? What is this plot? This is no plot.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, a bit of a bummer.
Definitely a bummer. Yeah. So, Aisha, not a good adaptation at all. Bride and Prejudice,
a pretty
great,
good.
Yeah. Great adaptation. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good time.
Huh. Yeah. So, I guess if you're not a Jane Austen fan, skip this episode.
Maybe we should have said that at the start. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. It's like, if you're not familiar with the source material for, like, what these movies are adapted from, then this episode probably made no sense. But we had fun.
That was so much fun. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Any Bollywood stuff?
No, again, it's like, I know stuff's happening out there in the world, but I'm too focused on other things that are happening in the world right now. I wish I could think more about Bollywood news.
It's like, there's so many different circles to pay attention to. There's the Bollywood stuff circle, but then there's, like, the actual, like, global news circle, and then there's, like, the U.S., like, doing stuff, and you're like, ugh. And then there's our own personal lives bubble.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That wasn't even the one I was thinking of, but that one's definitely there. I know. I feel like I haven't had the capacity to watch a movie that wasn't for the podcast.
Yeah.
In about a month.
I mean, that's fair. Okay, so no Bollywood stuff. Pluggables.
Yeah.
Follow us at Two White Girls Talk Bollywood on Instagram. Do what you do there. Also, consider subscribing to us on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. You could even leave a review or a rating if you feel so inclined. But whatever you choose to do or not do, thank you so much for listening.
Indeed. And join us on YouTube and Spotify, where we keep our Bollywood bangers playlists. I will certainly be adding some of the bops from Pride and Prejudice to those playlists. We link those in our episode descriptions as well as in our Instagram posts, so you can listen along to the music.
Mm-hmm. It's a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
Next.
Oh my God.
We're tackling a big, we're tackling a big one.
So this is the 10-year, upcoming is the 10-year anniversary of the release of the first Bahubali movie.
Yeah.
Which I have not seen.
Yes.
So we're going to watch it.
Yeah.
Katie has seen it. You've seen it.
I have seen it. I saw it a few years ago. I was very judgmental of it.
Yeah.
For one particular scene. So I'm excited to, like, watch it with a more open mind. I also watched it. I think it was actually technically the first Telugu film I'd ever seen. And I think I wasn't necessarily prepared for the differences that there – because there are differences between Telugu and Hindi films. And so I think I was, like, caught off guard and I was a little, like, grumbly about it. So I'm really excited to watch it again, having more knowledge and context, and then to be able to discuss it with you.
Yes, absolutely. I also, before we, you know, plot description and all the usual stuff, like, I am obsessed with Prabhas. Like, I know we talked about this. I know we both fell in love with Prabhas when we watched Kalki. I have watched so many of his movies since that day. And the Bahubali is now, like, back on Netflix. It wasn't on Netflix for a while in the U.S. I don't think my Netflix algorithm has ever been more confused than me not watching Bahubali. Like, it's literally, like, every time I opened Netflix for, like, a 2 or 3 week period, it was, like, the banner image. It was like, Kim, watch this movie. It's the Prabhas movie. And I was like, listen, I have a plan.
You're going to.
You have to wait.
Oh my gosh.
But yes, so I'm, and I know that there's going to be a lot of interesting stuff to talk about. I know that there are complicated things and I'm excited for all of it.
Yeah.
Not least of all, Prabhas.
I know. And I'm excited too, because when I watched it, I was like, I don't know who Prabhas is. Like, I don't, whatever. Like, I was neutral. And so I'm excited now that I like him a lot.
So the plot description on IMDb is a child from the Mahishmati kingdom is raised by tribal people and one day learns about his royal heritage, his father's bravery in battle, and a mission to overthrow the incumbent ruler. Oh, this is like some Lion King Hamlet
stuff. Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely like a warrior.
I guess it's not Hamlet, but Lion King.
Which is Hamlet.
Which is Hamlet, but it's more Lion King than Hamlet.
It's Hamlet twice removed.
Slash also kind of Mohenjo-Daro.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah.
We can't believe we haven't watched that yet. Anyway.
I know.
Bahubali is available on Netflix. In the U.S., you have to choose from, like, the Hindi version, the English version, or the Malayalam version, which... we wanted the Telugu version. It does look like there might be a version on YouTube. Those are the options. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Yeah. But the synopsis on Netflix is not nearly as in-depth, unfortunately. It just says, villagers in the kingdom of Mahishmati rescue a baby who is destined to embark on a heroic quest.
Mm. I look forward to finding out what that quest is. I hope I will be doing it in Telugu, but if I have to watch it in a Hindi dub, so be it.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll still get what's happening.
We will, yes. But yeah, I can't wait to chat about this one.
Yeah. So, I'm excited. Yeah. I genuinely am excited to give it another go and talk about it. So
I hope you like it better the second time.
Me too. So yeah, that is next time. And until then, remember, Bollywood doesn't need us.
Nope.
But we need Bollywood.
We do. less so poor adaptations of Jane Austen in Bollywood, yeah. but good adaptations of Jane Austen in Bollywood, definitely.
Bring it on. Love Jane Austen, love Bollywood.
Yeah, more crossovers.
Yeah. Woo!
Bye!
Bye!